Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 23rd of June 2013. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James, Nick from Partially Obstructed View, Phil from the West End Whingers, and Rev Stan. We're now going to talk about Cripple in Ishmaan at the Nelkad Theatre. Gareth, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, it's a 16-year-old Martin McDonagh play, which was first produced at the end at the National Theatre. It was one of, I think, about five of his kind of very dark comic Irish plays. We seem to have lost him now to film, because I think it's about 10 years since we last saw one of his plays. So this is a revival. It's set in 1934 in a small village on an island off the west coast of Ireland. And news arrives that a Hollywood director is coming to make a documentary on another island. And they all everybody wants to go and be part of all of this. And it centres around a crippled orphan, Billy, who's been adopted by a couple of sisters who are spinsters, I think. And he eventually persuades a local boatman, Babby Bobby, they've all got great names in this show, to take him with fellow teenagers Helena Bartley across to this island to seek their fame. And so it takes place not on the island where the filming is taking place, but it takes place in the village where they all live. It's a very dark, dark comedy. The character of Billy is disabled, and he indeed does end up going to California. I hope that isn't a spoiler, which I thought was quite amusing, because he didn't bother to return to his village to collect a passport that he presumably had. It's a little bit of implausibility there. And I enjoyed it very much. I enjoyed the play first time round, and I think, if anything, I enjoyed the play more this second time round. It's kind of, well, I think people are seeing it as a star vehicle for Daniel Radcliffe. And even though he is actually very good, you know, if you think this is only his third stage role and he never went to drama school, I think you have to admire the performance. But actually, he's surrounded by an absolutely brilliant cast. There are a couple of ladies, Ingrid Craigie and Gillian Hanna, who play the spinsters who adopted him. They're wonderful. And then the two teenagers, Sarah Green is a sort of feisty redhead, and a bit of a bully, who plays Helen, and Connor McNeil plays her brother Bartley, and they are both, you know, also very good. The village has a wonderful gossip who's called Johnny Patine Mike, and that's another cracking performance of Pat Shaw. I just think the whole thing was very, very well done, very, very well staged, very well worth reviving. And in all fairness, you know, I think Daniel Radcliffe's, you know, not using it as a star vehicle, because he's very much part of an ensemble, but actually performs very well. So a very enjoyable night out for me.
Of course, I always worry a little bit about Martin McDonagh, because although he's a sort of Irish stock, he was born, brought up in Elephant and Castle and in London, and he's not even actually London. He sounds almost rather posh when he speaks, so, or posh English when he speaks, which is rather disturbing when he does a lot of Irish stuff. But yeah, certainly it would be very interesting to see some of his more recent plays. I think he wrote a play for Broadway called A Handing in Spokane, which would be very interesting to see, and he also did the third play of his Isles of Arran trilogy, with Cripple of Inishmaan being the first one, then Lieutenant of Inishmore being second one. And I think there's sort of a third one which is either in the pipeline or he's written it and nobody's let him do it yet. Nick, what did you think about it?
I mean, yeah, it's interesting that you've just been talking about the kind of the Irishness of Martin McDonagh, and how certainly in this one, I mean, I've seen some of his films, but I've only seen two of his other stage plays, which I really liked. I saw The Beauty Queen Lynanne when that came to the Young Vic again a couple of years ago, and I saw The Lieutenant of Inishmore the first time around when that was in the West End. And I really enjoyed both of them. I think, but yes, he does play with a kind of deliberately inauthentic Irishness. And I think this, of the ones I've seen, this is the most full on that he goes for that. There's, I kind of described it as sort of Father Ted with slightly more violence, and it is kind of quite knowing. It kind of it does take advantage of that kind of stereotype with these funny characters, and there's a hell of a lot of running jokes. That's largely where a lot of the humour comes from, and it's very, very funny. And yes, I think overall, I think, yeah, this is a very, very good production. I think the only thing I felt from it is that I think Michael Grandage could have explored maybe the darkness of it a bit more. It doesn't, because there's a nastiness to Martin McDonagh's work, and this doesn't really come across quite as much. I think the closest you get to it is in the character of Helen, who's, as you say, is a bully, and she's the one who most unashamedly, to his face, makes fun of Billy's disabilities, and of course the fact that he quite likes her makes it so much worse. But outside of that, I felt like there was kind of the darkness of the comedy wasn't quite in there. But I agree. I think the cast is fantastic overall. Daniel Radcliffe's obviously not been looking for something to be a star vehicle, and he doesn't play it like that. I mean, inevitably, it being a part with it kind of quite exaggerated physical disabilities being quite central to it, because obviously it has to be so extreme that he can't work. This is kind of one of the things of his... one of the reasons he feels so trapped, even more than everybody else there, is that he is so bored all the time that he ends up staring at cows as a form of entertainment. So apart from that, kind of the actual performance is incredibly low key, and he plays him as very kind of normal in many ways, just really frustrated. So I think that's great. I think it's great that because it does allow all the more extreme characters around him to really flourish, and you see those great performances from everybody else. I mean, as well as everybody who Gareth mentioned, the rest of the cast are June Watson as the drunken mammy, who there's a subplot in there where Johnny Patine Mike has been spending his life trying to give her alcohol poisoning to death, and she's quite happily got along with this and quite happily failed to die from it well into her 90s. And the other character is Babby Bobby, who's poor Ed Delaney, who's again, quite an interesting character in that he's kind of the face of decency in that place, but there's quite interesting kind of turns to that, and there's sort of darkness underneath the character. So there's certainly, I think it's a really good ensemble piece. I think it's very, very funny. It just maybe could have that, I think, a little bit of the bite's been taken out of it.
Phil, what did you think about it?
Well, I really enjoyed it because I thought it was tremendously funny, and I've enjoyed pretty much all of Martin McDonagh's plays. I actually saw The Beheading in Spokane with Christopher Walken, spending an hour and a half trying to find his dismembered hand with Sam Rockwell, which is, unfortunately, when we eventually get it, I'm sure we won't get Christopher Walken. But anyway, yeah, I agree. It's quite Father Ted-ish in its comedy and the sort of the stereotyping of Irishness. And I particularly like, I mean, I did like Radcliffe in this. I thought he was a very sort of understated performance. He actually disappears for quite a bit of the play, which I think, you know, they are sort of selling it on his name. If people are going to see it just for him, I think they'll actually still enjoy it, because I particularly liked the older women in it. The two aunts who run the shop that pretty much only sells tinned peas, Gillian Hanna and Ingrid Craigie, are a tremendous double act. I think they're about the best double act on stage in London at the moment. And I also really liked June Watson as Johnny Patine Mike's alcoholic mother, who he's trying to sort of finish her off by feeding her more alcohol. June Watson plays the 90-year-old mother, and she was absolutely terrific. I think it's, you know, it is very funny. It is quite nasty, I think, still. I think it's quite a bit of the darkness is still there. It's not overdone. I thought it was nicely handled. And it's also got the new onstage trend for smashing eggs, which started in Children of the Sun, where they're throwing eggs around. What's her name? Helen smashes eggs all over her brother's head. Amen Corner's got egg smacking. Of course, Britain's Got Talent had it as well. So it's sort of, I think it's something to look out for. Egg smashing on stage. No, I thought the play was just incredibly entertaining. I laughed a lot.
Do we think it was, I mean, it is very politically incorrect, isn't it? And I wonder whether, I mean, I my recollection of seeing it 16 years ago is it didn't seem as much as politically incorrect as it did today. I just wonder whether we've kind of changed and we're seeing the play through a different lens now. But, I mean, even, you know, despite the political incorrectness, we kind of somehow allow him to get away with it.
Political correctness is sort of quite in fashion at the moment with the Book of Mormon and everything. So I think people do like to be allowed to laugh at things we shouldn't really be laughing at. Yeah, we are getting more politically incorrect, but I think, it's not. I mean, yes, you are getting laughs at the expense of the characters, but without giving away how it finishes, I think it's rather sweet in many ways. And I think Daniel Radcliffe's rather sweet in this, actually. He's very, very likable on stage, and I do admire his choices that he's made. I think he hasn't taken the easy route at all.
No, I mean, Equus was a very tough first role, I think, to take on, particularly as you've got to get your kit off when you're about 19 or something. But then, I mean, I'd love to have seen him in Broadway on in Sweet Smell of Success, was it? I mean, you know, doing a Broadway musical. So to go...
It was How to Succeed in Business. I actually did see that. And he was perfectly good. I thought the musical was absolutely shocking. But yeah, he was perfectly good in it.
Yeah. So it is, you know, it's quite a trajectory, isn't it, to go from Equus to that to this. And he doesn't have to. And I think he's very brave and to be admired for that.
And also, I think doing an Irish accent while surrounded by genuine Irish actors, which isn't, and I thought he pulled that off very well. I mean, somebody who's Irish may have thought differently, but it sounded to me he didn't stand out as his accent being at all inauthentic.
No, and indeed the deformity was very well done as well. I mean, he was very believable, in his disability.
I think it's also worth noting when we're talking about him not kind of going for a starring role. He did actually choose this one. I think it's been in a few interviews with Michael Grandage that Grandage gave him a shortlist of Irish plays, and this was the one he went for. So it's quite interesting that he's going for one which he knows is going to be sold on his name, but isn't kind of a grandstanding performance. And I think there's a lot of actors. There's a certain scene in there where he's on his own where I think you could quite imagine actors going in for what I call the Oscar clip, and he really doesn't kind of milk it that way. So yeah, I think certainly he comes out of this very well on a lot of fronts.
I'm surprised there hasn't been any speculation about what his first Shakespearean role is going to be, because I think that's an inevitability, really. So I shall start the speculation. How long will it be before we get his Hamlet?
I think, you know what, I think there's an interview with him in the programme where he's talking about Puck, so...
Yeah, you're right, there is, yeah.
So I think he's been talking about that. That's certainly, yeah, I think you want to get a few Shakespeares in before you want to get the Hamlet.
Yeah.
But the thing is, as well, of course, that's the Midsummer Night's Dream is the next one up in the Michael Grandage season. So I would imagine it's going to be a while before he does it, unless, of course, he did it in New York, which somebody might ask him in it.
Yeah.
I could certainly see him in Romeo and Juliet, and possibly in one of the. He would make an interesting Romeo, make a much better Mercutio. But he will also make quite an interesting. If they did a Merchant of Venice. He could play sort of the young hero in that, because that would be a bit of a departure for him, because it's a rather vicious part, you know, in many ways, that part.
There's an actor who did Hamlet as almost his first stage role, and that was Ben Whishaw. So it's not impossible he might not move straight to Hamlet.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he could go straight for a big part. I mean, he's certainly brave. I mean, that might be the thing that he comes unstuck on, but I think he'd certainly be up for trying it. I mean, I think, you know, with Equus, for instance, it's a huge part, and he pulled it off. But I think also, because it was his first stage role, and he was, you know, there was so much media spotlight on him, and the fact he was naked on stage, if you can do that and then go and do a Broadway musical when you're not sort of known necessarily for singing and dancing, it's, you know, a tough world over there, and he apparently pulled it off, so...
But it was very important that he had the dear old Richard Griffiths with him in Equus, you know, because I was sitting on those stage seats for that, and you could sort of, so you could see side of stage and you could see at the end, and the chemistry between those two, it was obvious that, you know, because he had his dad there, as it were, you know, that helped him a lot. I think that his relationship, his true life relationship with Richard Griffiths, really helped him a lot in that first role.
I also talked to Rev Stan about The Cripple of Inishmar, and we began by talking about whether the role of Billy was unlike the Daniel Radcliffe that we've come to expect.
Well, it's funny how you say it's very unlike him. I think I commented to a friend in the interval that this feels like the most removed from any part I've ever seen him do before. Regardless of what you think of the Harry Potter films, I think I have to admire Daniel Radcliffe, because he always seems to be pushing himself. Equus was the first thing he did on stage and the first thing I saw him in, obviously. And that was a very, very brave move for him to do that at 17, and it could have gone terribly wrong, but it didn't. I actually thought he was very good in that. And then he did the musical on Broadway, and he seems to be one of these people that just will throw himself wholeheartedly into these roles and purposely takes on challenging roles in order to push himself. And I thought he acquitted himself absolutely fantastically in this. I thought he did a very good Irish accent. So it's the most removed I've seen him from any part I've seen him play. You just completely forgot about Potter and any of the other things he's done, which I think is a testament to his acting. I thought the physical performance very good. Obviously, he plays a cripple, so he has to put in a sort of a very consistent physical performance, and I thought that was very good. And it's not, I mean, unlike Equus, where he's on the stage and he is really the star of the show, even though he's the poster boy on this, it's very much an ensemble piece. He's not, even if he's there sort of in spirit, he's not physically on stage as much as you would think, given how much prominence he's been given in sort of all the advertising. I mean, yes, he plays the title character, but there are a lot of scenes where he's not in it. Obviously, he's talked about, but he's not actually in it. So I think he does a great job in sort of making his presence felt, but he doesn't sort of overshadow the rest of the cast, who are absolutely superb. I mean, I'm a big fan of Martin McDonagh's work anyway, and I love a black comedy, and this is very cruel. It's one of those sort of comedies where you do feel a little bit guilty when you're laughing. But I think what elevates this is the tragedy in it. It feels like even though you're laughing one minute, that the next minute you feel almost like you're on the verge of tears, because there is always it just feels like it's one step away for something really tragic at all times. And I think that's what I think was the key to enjoying this as much as I did. I like that sort of the way that was married, the humour and the tragedy. It's very subtle, the tragedy, but it's there. It's kind of like this presence in the background, and I thought it worked very, very well with the humour. And I think that's quite difficult to pull off, but testament to Martin McDonagh's skill as a writer. But I really enjoyed this, and I've actually booked to see it again because I liked it that much. But I'm going to see it right at the very end of the run, so it'd be interesting to see sort of how it's bedded in.
Yeah, that very last moment of the play is rather spooky, isn't it? And I always like the relationship between the brother and the sister in there, who the sister who constantly bullies her brother.
It's a play that's just full of fantastic characters. I mean, most of them aren't particularly likable, but they are very larger than life characters, which is why I sort of see this as a group piece rather than sort of like, you know, a vehicle for Daniel Radcliffe, because there are some brilliant characters in there, some very dominant characters. Pat Short plays Johnny Patine Mike. I mean, he was sort of almost the dominant character in this. He's, I definitely put him on a par with Cripple Billy in terms of stage time and storyline. And again, you know, it's an interesting choice for Daniel Radcliffe, especially as he's, I think, one of only two actors in the company that isn't Irish. So again, very brave move for him to do that. And I think he does it very well.
We're now going to talk about The Score for Scandal at the Park Theatre. This is a production of Richard Brinsley Sheridan's play by the Red Hand Theatre Company, which is pretty much the director, Jessica Swale, who had a great success a few years ago with The Rivals, and also charmed everybody a lot with Busybodies. This play, she's cut it slightly, I believe, but it's pretty much the play as is. Done on a very simple set. We pretty much just have a few glass cabinets which can turn either into mirrors or pictures when people go inside them. The play itself, it's about a couple of brothers, one who's very virtuous and the other one's a bit dissolute, but of course the dissolute one is the most attractive one. They are being looked after by a man with a much younger wife, and the wife has got herself involved in her group she runs with is the School for Scandal of the title. They tend to gossip, and the chief gossip here is Lady Sneerwell, played by Belinda Lang, who's probably the best known person, certainly the television person. But I think there's a very interesting cast here, and I felt it was. I thought it was well done. I mean, I've seen Jessica Swale's stuff before, and it's certainly up to her normal, this normal standard. It's rather interesting, and she does a fun way of doing it. There's a lot of joy. It was rather dampened on the day I went, which was a Saturday matinee, and the only one of the banks of seating in the Park Theatre was full, and the other two banks weren't, and it made it sometimes rather embarrassing for them, because they would try to play to the other two banks of the theatre and there was no one there. But they has, you know, it has some lots of fun songs in it, lots of which are written, I believe, by Jessica Swale and her musical director, Laura Forrest Hay. And I thought this was a lot of fun. One of the odd things about this is it's been rather... it got rather poorly reviewed for the first couple of times. The Evening Standard and The Guardian thought it was rather lame. And I did wonder if that was in part because of a couple of years ago, Deborah Warner did a very controversial production of The School for Scandal at the Barbican. And it kind of colours it slightly. It's sort of the radical, it's a sort of radical reinterpretation that Deborah Warner did, which was in many ways a mess. But it was because it was so radical, it was almost as if people are expecting the next one not to be quite so conventional. I mean, this isn't absolutely conventional, and it is very entertaining. I found it extremely entertaining and very, and really tells the story of the play rather well. But I just wondered if the other critics from the sort of the Evening Standard and the Guardian, they wanted more bite to it, more satire. I'm not absolutely certain this is a satirical play, really. Nick, what did you think about this?
I think if people are unfairly comparing it to the Deborah Warner one, I think it is certainly unfair, because as you say, it's not what Jessica Swale does isn't as conventional as it looks. Certainly, if you compare it to kind of something like, there was a big production of The Rivals in the West End a couple of years ago, which is to me the kind of the traditional image of the conventional way of how you do things. And compared to that, there's a lot more kind of cheekiness to Jessica Swale's approach. That even though, I mean, she's stopped now doing the thing of interspersing modern pop songs done on period instruments, but the songs she now puts in are they are kind of anachronistic. They are a bit kind of on the nose. So there is kind of a bit of a glint in the eye to these productions that isn't there even in kind of the even in the better sort of traditional productions of Restoration Comedy. So I think if she is being kind of looked at as doing things in quite a boring traditional way, I think that's quite an inaccurate and unfair comparison. I've seen four of her Restoration Comedies. I saw The Rivals, I saw The Busybody, which was The Busybody was by far my favourite of the lot. And there was another one, The Bell Stratagem as well. They were all at Southwark Playhouse, which I think the old Southwark Playhouse, which I think was a better venue for it than the Park Theatre. The Park 200, which is the main house, which is where they're playing it, it reminded me of a slightly smaller Donmar Warehouse. So although there is a lot of the sort of audience interaction that is another very standard thing that she really goes for, the venue doesn't lend itself quite as well to that. So I think she is working against certain things in there. I mean, she does have actors coming all over the place and turning up in the circle and that sort of thing. But there is at one point an actor actually sitting among the audience, but it's not quite as organic as it was in the space that she could kind of manipulate a bit more. Because obviously Southwark was a studio space, and she could decide exactly what the seating was going to be like and have her actors clambering over the audience a lot more. Also, the other thing for me is that I'm not crazy about the play itself. I know it's kind of it's supposedly the most famous Restoration Comedy and the best loved. I find it, even for that genre, to be very messily written. The plots are all over the place, and I certainly found it easier here to understand who was who and who was related to who and what story everybody was involved in than I did with that Deborah Warner version. But it's still one of those stories where you get a subplot turn up and go, oh God, yeah, I'd forgotten all about that happening. So within those confines, I think it's done as well as you could do this play. It is very funny. It is it takes a little while to get going, but once it there's a couple of characters. There's a Crabtree and Backbite, who are Russell Bentley and Michael Breyer, who their appearance is kind of what kicks off the sort of just ridiculousness of it all, the really kind of extreme kind of campness that you often get in her productions. So I think it's not my favourite of these revivals of hers, but it's I think if you possibly were going in there fresh and you hadn't seen all those things, I think she's left us off with so much to live up to with those last three productions, which were always highlights for me of whatever year they were in. I think if you went in there fresh, not knowing what she does, I think you'd be blown away by it. And it is still very, very funny. I think it's a new venue. I think everybody's going to be finding their way in that. I think I went on a Friday night and it wasn't packed, but it was better than you were describing. But I mean, this is going to be a problem with a new venue that's fairly out of the way as well, is it's going to take a while for audiences to come to it. So they are kind of fighting against that at the moment as well. But given there's actually a lot to fight against, I think this is pretty spectacular.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.